Hello, everyone. I'm John Melke. Welcome to Parkside Today. It's a pleasure to have two guests with us today who will share some ideas, best practices, some tips to help us all keep our digital information safe. Cindy Sobchak is an IS supervisor in the UW Parkside Campus Technology Services, and Linda Wyorka is an instructional technology manager on the UW Parkside Innovation in Learning team. Cindy and Linda, welcome to Parkside Today.
Morning, John.
Good morning, John.
You know, not a day goes by where you don't hear, read, or see a story about data security or a breach of data security or computer hacking. And each day, more and more business is done on the web and information is shared on the web. Is it even possible to be 100% sure that our information is safe and secure?
I would say no.
Start the program out on an enlightening note.
You have to understand that there's going to be some sort of risk as hackers these days and those types of people, they move at a very fast pace to try and break into different things and breach websites and companies and things like that.
Sure.
Right. I mean, they say over 90% of the breaches that happen today are they involve compromised username and passwords.
So we'll talk a little bit later about maybe a little bit more on the individual side and you know what we can do as individuals with our home computers and things. But tell us a little bit about what the state of Wisconsin and the University of Wisconsin system, what are we doing to help keep state and UW Parkside information safe and secure?
Well, with the recent breaches over the few years at some of the universities in the UW system, they have UW system and the Board of Regents have taken a step to fortify their commitment in information security across all of the campuses in this throughout the state. Okay. So with that came some policies that they have rolled down to each of the individual campuses, and we're following those by implementing those at our individual campuses in one way, shape, or form.
Okay. Now, recently, I went through the Duo training. That's one tactic or one element in keeping information safe and secure. What is Duo?
Duo is the company. It's a cloud-based service that utilizes two-step authentication to protect your account, gives you a second step, so to speak, after you log into a certain application and you use a physical device to verify who you are, that you are who you are.
And Linda, when in what you're doing here at UW Parkside, you're dealing with, and when I go off the rails here, you can say, no, that's not what I do, John, but you're dealing with instruction, classroom offerings that are taking place online versus in the traditional in-class setting.
Correct. That's correct.
And so what challenges do you face in terms of security and information, making sure that the information that's out there about a class is secure, or grades are secure, or tests are secure? What do you do in those areas?
All of our online courses are offered through our LMS, and we are currently in a transition moving from D2L to Canvas. Okay. And because this security initiative is coming down from the top, from the state, they have set a lot of the guidelines for us. So we're basically covered. Now that we're going to Canvas, we're all under one instance of the LMS for system-wide.
Okay.
So it makes our job a lot easier as far as authentication goes for the LMS and keeping everything safe behind the authentication for the LMS.
Sure. Do you find that students and faculty, are they concerned about keeping the information safe, or do they have questions about it, or they just kind of go, yep, okay, let's go ahead and do the class and learn and
yeah, that's what we are trying to get the word out because I think it's taken for granted most of the time. Not logging out of a computer when you walk away from it. I mean, that happens. You walk through a lab, you'll see somebody had walked away from the computer and it's still logged in.
Right.
Their email could be open. Yeah. So things like that. You just need to make the campus more aware.
Right. So that maybe that leads into a little bit of what are some of the things that you mentioned walking away from a computer without logging out. You know, what are some of the things that, that really impact whether information data is secure?
Well, one of the things is, like Linda mentioned, 90% of the breaches today are caused by humans. So they're caused by our own selves compromising our username or password by clicking on links that we shouldn't, going to websites that we probably shouldn't, downloading things we probably shouldn't that have malware behind them and things like that. So we're trying to teach people to make sure you have your operating system up to date on your personal computers. Make sure you use some sort of an antivirus package or an anti-malware package. And just kind of be careful what you do. If you there's some password management apps that you can download to your smartphones to keep your, instead of putting your password on a post-it note underneath your keyboard, you know, you can keep all of your passwords safe in an app that's encrypted and secure. Something like LastPass, A-Wallet, or Password Keeper. There's quite a few out there if you look.
Okay. And here on campus, doesn't take usually too long before something hits an email, hits our inbox that, I mean, I'm still trying to get the young man in France enrolled here at Parkside. And he said he'd give me $35,000 if I did it. So I'm working on it. I'm trying to, no, but kidding there. But the number of times that, that people here at Parkside, and I'm assuming throughout the state, are presented with things that, like you say, if it looks too good to be true, it's too good to be true. How are they, how are some of those people even getting the information to be able to send something like that to a mass group?
Well, that would take one of our networking teams to kind of give you the technical ways that it happens. But people, like I said, clicking on links, going to places that they're not supposed to go. If someone has their address book full of contacts, if one person gets hit with some sort of malware, it can trigger so that it sends to everybody in their address book. And that's how it kind of populates around campus, at least on our campus. Things like phishing emails and ransomware emails. We've been getting a lot of those lately. Those kinds of things. So just it just takes one person in some instances to get compromised.
Right. And a lot and I don't think a lot of people think about this, but even with social media, you'll see though the surveys that'll come out. What fruit are you, or what season are you? And then you click, you know, the button, and it's looking at all of your data that you have on Facebook in your about section. If you have a lot of stuff listed there, your email, your phone number, they just, you know, take that information, and you know, so be very wary of taking those types of quizzes and surveys on Facebook.
And one of the things that state of Wisconsin employees are have to do is to go through IT security training. So there's a program out there that you have to go and do that. Are there similar things for kind of the just the average person that they're, if they said, oh, I'd like to go find something online that could help me with I should do this or shouldn't do this or be looking for that?
There are, I'm sure that there are. There's probably TED Talks, or if they have access to lynda.com. What else is there? There's another one that's that offers classes. But there's a lot of information out there that they can look at that will tell them best practices for keeping your security, keeping your home PC safe, you know, and keeping your password safe and not getting compromised.
And that we have some information up on our website as well for, you know, staying secure and cybersecurity, cybersecurity tips. We're also adding documentation to our knowledge base, and we have a glossary of cybersecurity terms out there, and that's available to the public as well.
And Linda, some of the things you say on our website, on the UW Parkside website, is information on the site available to someone who is not a Parkside student or faculty person?
Yes, it is.
So where should they go if they're not associated with the university? If they go to uwp.edu, what are they looking for?
They can click on logins at the top of any of our web pages on our UW Parkside web pages,
mm-hmm.
and in that list, on that screen, it'll list now UW Parkside knowledge base, and then
okay.
they can click on that and they can search a term like cybersecurity or security,
mm-hmm.
and it should come up with the articles.
Mm-hmm. On campus, what are, from the campus, we'll talk campus technology services first, what are some of the bigger things that your team is looking for all the time or you know, things that you're trying to make sure that you're aware of? In terms of, is there something that members of campus technology services, whether they're looking at at some of the computer labs, mm-hmm. or are there certain particular things that they're looking for more than others, or some of the key things?
Our networking staff has some tools that will search for PII data, which is personal identification information. I think mm-hmm. it's what it stands for. Okay. I'm not exactly sure. But they have a tool that scans all of our computers on campus and looks for that. And if somebody's comes up as having a lot of data, we will notify them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, finding social security numbers and some of our students' information and financial data. So I know that they do a lot of monitoring in the background for those types of things. They also search for, they search for hacking for compromised accounts. They get notified about that. And then they send that information to our help desk and we contact the user and tell them that we've reset your password. Actually, networking team resets their password immediately, and then sends the notification to us to get a hold of them and say, your password has been reset
mm-hmm.
because of, you know, being compromised. And so then we can set a new password for them.
Sure.
So they do quite a bit of monitoring in the back end.
And keeping things updated. You know,
yes.
Software updates are pushed.
Mm. Yep, we have updates going to all the machines on campus every third Wednesday or Tuesday of the month.
Mm-hmm. Regarding the password, that's another thing that's going on campus where faculty and staff, and I don't know about students, so maybe you can help me there, but we're being asked or required to change our password every 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the purpose behind that?
That was another part of the UW system administration. That's one of the policies for this larger security hardening of all the campuses, that we changed the password characters from 8 to 12, between 12 and 30
mm-hmm.
characters for length, and then using strong passwords or passphrases
mm-hmm.
such as John... John cassette sticker, you know, something longer, some word combining words that don't match make a longer password.
Okay.
Along with a set of numbers and uppercase and lowercase and also a special character.
Mm-hmm.
So they're doing that. And then having them change, and this is for all students as well.
Okay.
They change their passwords every 180 days.
Is that something that is pretty well, did it take a while to maybe get campus informed on that or to get that process moving?
Mm-hmm. We did have a campaign, I think that was last summer, about it, and that consisted of using our screens on campus to notify the students in the hallways and that the password requirements had changed,
mm-hmm.
and putting out flyers and putting things through email and signage across campus, different posters and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they've adapted to it. Some people complain about it, which I understand, but we have to do it for keeping things safe.
Yeah.
I think involved in that, that whole campaign was getting the word out and getting the message to faculty, staff, and students to be sure to set their secret questions. Is that what they're called?
Correct.
In case they have to, if they forgot their password and they have to reset their password, they need to have those questions set.
Right, right.
Correct.
And my password, you know, my birthday is August 29. I think that's pretty strong, don't you think?
Oh, well, you don't want to use something like that. One of the things that in our duo training sessions that we say is, you know, and we've done it ourselves, don't use passwords across many different systems that you use. Like
use
for
the
your
same password.
Right,
same
correct.
Password, right.
So the same password for your banking information as you do for Netflix or something. Mm-hmm. That's probably not a good practice. And choose something different every time. Don't have the same password and just add a new number like the color blue 1. And then the next time you reset it, blue 2 or
right.
blue 3. Use something, you know, pick something random. Sometimes music lyrics work. To do, mm-hmm. think, you know, if you have a particular lyric that'll come up with it'll be longer.
Yeah.
It's harder to compromise if the longer it is.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Right. And Linda, on the, on UW Parkside continuing to offer more, academics online, what challenges does that pose for you and your team as you go from maybe, let's say 10 or 15 years ago when the offerings online were probably pretty small, you know, not very many. And now each year there's more and more things that are available to students. What does that pose as challenges for you and your team?
Well, and I don't know if this is considered a challenge, but it has caused us to work together across departments. So working with Cindy's area has become crucial because a lot of our instructors and students, they're online, they're off campus. It could be on the weekends, it could be in the evenings,
mm-hmm.
and they need help. They're locked out, and the collaboration between the two areas is crucial in order to get them back online, you know, and into their accounts quickly. So, and I think with all of the hard work that Cindy's area has done and the support that they provide, our students and faculty are pretty well taken care of as far as getting their passwords reset and help
mm-hmm.
during the off hours.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How hard is it for, maybe hard is the wrong word, but how hard is it for a faculty member to say, okay, I'm going to offer my classes online? Is it a difficult process to learn how to offer the class online or how to teach online, or is that something that most people get pretty quickly?
Well, we have a policy here at UW Parkside. In order for an instructor to be approved to teach online, they have to go through our online course development workshop, which is offered every summer.
Okay.
And then once they go through this workshop, they develop a course, and then that has to go through a modified QM review.
Okay.
And then once that is approved, then they can teach it. And it's usually the following semester or the following year that they'll be teaching that course. And then after that, they can develop as many online courses as they want.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And not to put you on the spot with numbers, but how many Parkside faculty are teaching online? Is it like half or three quarters or 25% or...
I always forget the total number of instructors that we have on campus, but I know that we have somewhere in the ballpark of between 70 and 80 instructors that are teaching online.
They're teaching online, right. And I think our total, now this is full-time faculty, mm-hmm. Is about 120-ish, mm-hmm. you know, something like that. So it's a fair percentage. Mm-hmm. What about from the student perspective? Are students, you know, maybe like, reluctant isn't the right word, but are they like, how do I go about taking a class online if they haven't taken it? Is there any barriers there, or do you help students through the process of knowing how you go about doing that? Or in today's world, is it like if they're 18 years old and coming in, they got that figured out already?
We have a lot of resources out there for them. We have technology requirements for online learners. We have a self-paced, self-enroll Canvas student training course that all students have access to. So I think and then, you know, they can come into the help desk as well if they need help, but we do have quite a few resources out there for the students.
And even in the when students are in a high school environment or a middle school environment, they're doing quite a few things regarding their classwork. They have to they almost have to be able to be connected online, right?
Yes. Yeah. And more and more it's working kind of in the opposite directions. The students come in and they're very tech savvy and they have their mobile devices and they want everything available at their fingertips.
Yeah.
And so there are still, you know, some classes that are being offered on campus, they're not really in any LMS yet. So we're moving towards getting all of the classes to at least, you know, have a syllabus and some course material because the students, you know, want to access it, you know, on their mobile devices.
So. Yeah, yeah, that's what they want. Shifting over a little bit to away from Parkside and more of the group, but as individuals, you go home, jump on a computer, and, you know, you're doing whatever you're doing, looking at ESPN or CNN or whatever. What are some of the things that from both of your perspectives, people need to be aware of in their home environments for data and information security?
Well, just one of the things is just keeping their machines up to date, operating system-wise. Make sure that they're still able to get the updates. Make sure that they have that their machine doesn't get so old that it can't be updated anymore. Having a decent antivirus protection and anti-malware protection, and watching their social mobile risks by going to different social media sites and things like that. Like Linda had mentioned before, the advertisements and things in Facebook. Just kind of know your risk. That some of the things that like are far out stories and things like that and not a reputable site, you have to just be a little careful. However, I know that a few years ago, the Google name, when you go to Google, was hacked. And if you clicked on the name Google to see something, it issued malware to people's machines. So you just have to know your risks, kind of just watch what you're doing. If your machine acts up a little bit, scan it. Scan it for malware. You might be surprised what you find. You know, don't download the extra little toolbars that are offered on some of the sites.
Okay.
Watch when you're installing things that it's from a reputable company. Things like that.
You know what else, too, to add to that is to be certain that your Wi-Fi access at home is password protected. You don't have an open access Wi-Fi router because other people can hack into it that way.
Sure.
And that leads into during the Duo training, and Cindy, you brought this up the other day in the training about the heading out there to
a coffee shop.
We won't use a particular name, but any coffee shop or any place where you walk in and there's free Wi-Fi available that poses a risk, right?
It can. Any open public Wi-Fi, they don't take, you know, the security precautions that we would hear. So like you see the stories on Dateline, you know, where they've done, they've had people sitting outside of coffee shops just with their little laptops, just downloading and gathering as much personal information from the people inside while they're working on their personal laptops. It does happen. So, you know your risk when you sign into Wi-Fi. It might save you some data on your plan, but you also might get, you know, some extra little malware installed at the same time.
Is there anything on the, and you talked just a little bit before about if your machine seems to be running a little, you know, a little quirky or a little goofy, is there any value to in the history of your visits to different websites to clearing that history, getting rid of that? It seems, I know it happened to me here a little while ago where, you know, whatever was on there, we had to go and clear that history. Is that something that could be done at home, should be done at home?
Oh, yeah, you can do that. If you have trouble getting to sites that you normally go to and stuff like that, it's good just to clear it every once in a while.
And also keep your browsers up to date.
Correct.
Oh,
because they update constantly. I mean, every couple of weeks, you know, they'll release an update, and it's usually to fix and patch, you know, things that are, you know, are security risks. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, very important to keep your browsers up.
Can it be confusing for people that if they see, you know, if they are legitimately concerned about keeping their information, their data secure, and here comes something to say, oh, you need Firefox, need to update Firefox. You know, how do you know that, oh, this is legit, this is a legit Firefox update versus somebody out there who now I'm going to be giving away information?
Ooh, that's hard. It's hard to tell sometimes. If you get the prompt, I guess I wouldn't go with what the prompt tells you. I'd actually close out the prompt and go back to the original website and then do an update from there.
Okay.
You can also set it to auto update.
Right.
Maybe it does it behind the scenes and it stays up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that really I think was interesting in the training for faculty and staff here was looking at where something is coming from that, you know, you mentioned like the Google that, oh, here comes something from Google, but the URL is actually like Google NEX1, you know, or something. I mean, those are things you kind of have to look at where a little bit more detail, right?
Right. Some of the phishing emails and things that we get with links in it and our students get, if you just take your mouse and hover over those links, and if it says something different than what you're expecting it to say, or what it says it's supposed to go, and same with the person that sends it to you.
Yeah.
So if you hover over their name and their address, if it's different than what it says, chances are it might not be legitimate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And we tell the faculty, staff, and students, though, that they can always send it to us to evaluate. Here on campus, we can take a look at it if they're not sure. Because some of the emails that go around this campus are, they look really legitimate.
Yeah.
But they may not be.
Right. And, you know, just last week I sent you one that came to my inbox, and the part that was that made me look at it and went, okay, something's up here, is that it came to john.melke, which is, if you send that to john.melke, it'll work.
Mm-hmm.
But the majority of my emails are the Melke J, and saw that and went, oh, okay, that's probably not. I think that was the French person who needed to get in here with the $35,000. Not sure, but so I know we've got just a few minutes left in the program. What, if you were to say, what are your top three or four things in terms of somebody trying to remember, oh, okay, what is it that I can do to keep my information, my data safe?
Get a password management device or password management app on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
Most people have smartphones these days that can kind of hold all of your passwords in one place. You don't have to have them on a post-it note, you know, somewhere or just laying around.
Mm-hmm.
Keep your machines up to date,
mm-hmm.
You know, as far as operating system and anti-malware and antivirus.
Mm-hmm.
And if you use social media, Twitter, Facebook, they all have security guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's good to check how you have your sites set.
Right.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Right.
Be wary of your emails. You know, if it sounds too good to be true, it might be. It probably is.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the best practice. Google best practices for security, for PC security or computer security.
Okay.
And they'll give you a quick list or rundown of things to probably check.
Sure. And what about the in the URL when you see the HTTP, and then now you're seeing a lot of the HTTPS. Does the S make a difference?
Yes, that's a secure site. Those you'll find with your banking. If you go to your bank's website, they're going to come up with an HTTPS site.
Mm.
So that's a secure site.
Okay.
So you want to make sure you're looking for that too, especially if you're entering in or you have to enter in any personal information.
Right.
Or you're buying something online. You want to make sure that site is HTTPS.
Right. And if you're getting an email, if you're getting some kind of notice from someone who is asking for a password, a username, right there, big red flag, right?
Correct, yes. Most places don't ask you over your email for passwords, social security numbers, and things like that.
Okay. So we got to watch out for people wanting to know what our passwords are.
Mm-hmm.
We got to watch out for an unbelievable amount of money coming from somewhere probably in or outside of the United States. Not a good thing. And we want to keep all of the equipment, the browsers, whether we're using Firefox or a Google or a Microsoft product, keep those up to date. And those are helpful things.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'm glad that Cindy Sobchak from our Campus Technology Services and Linda Wyorka from Instructional Technology, the Instructional Technology team, thank you for being with us today on Parkside Today and sharing these ideas for helping us keep our information and data secure.
You're welcome, John.
Thank you
for having us.